Welcome back to We're Drunk and We Know Things as we continue our journey through all 24 James Bond movies. We are still in the Blind Pig, still being served amazing cocktails by the wonderful Carl, who I kind of want to marry, except I'm already married and yeah. Anyway.
I'm taking him home with me in my pocket.
We are still in black tie, kind of. Mike apparently couldn't find a dicky bow. Or indeed dress trousers. But, you know, if he's going to phone it in.
I've got dress trousers.
You're not wearing them.
Well, yeah, but I've got them. Also, I'm wearing a tux, sort of.
Professionalism, people.
Listen, I'm more of a Jay-Z type Bond.
This is We Know Things. We're drunk and we know things. And we are doing James Bond.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
So we're back with the second half. If this is the first half you're listening to, please bear in mind that because we are doing all 24 James Bond movies ish back to back, we've decided to separate the podcast into two halves, and we're basically doing three actors in the first half, three Bond actors in the second, and for each actor we will cover their background, the films they were in, how they got the role, etc. There is no tech segment this month, but we do discuss each of the Bond's gadgets and some of the technology they use. This is the second half, so if you haven't heard the first half, go and listen to that first, because it's the first half. Anyway, also included are Amazon one-star reviews for each of the actors' films. So let's get back to it with the modern Bonds.
So now we're on to what you call the modern Bonds. And what I call probably the most... The postmodern Bond? Okay, I don't know.
Okay, one of them is kind of classic, but not very well liked. The other two are modern.
I think of the three that are left, there is a Bond, which is fucking bananas and makes Bond his own, and two Bonds, which are calling it back to a stronger and a more serious time, I would say. But anyway, but who is the one of the three? We'll reveal that later. Also, I'll forget about that analogy and never call it back again. So anyway, we're talking about Timothy Dalton.
We are.
Who are you?
Bond, James Bond.
Again, I think he's a sir, right?
Is he a sir?
No idea.
Not Scooby. Why doesn't our staff look that up while we keep talking? Timmy Dalton was Bond because he auditioned, as always, as we said before. Pierce Brosnan, to say his name properly, was apparently, as the story goes, they had set a press conference for Pierce Brosnan to walk out the door and announce that he was a new Bond.
Yep.
And as he was walking out the door, his phone rang, and it turns out that Remington Steele had got picked up for another series in syndication, so he was contractually obliged to do it. So a bit, little bit like Tom Selleck in the Indiana Jones number, he lost the role and he was the first choice. So they had to suddenly, oh shit, we've got to find a new geezer. So Timothy Dalton was originally offered the role when he was 22, right? So like Roger Moore.
Yeah.
So before Roger Moore was Bond, Timothy Dalton was offered the role of Bond. And Timothy Dalton said, I am too young. I'm 22. I'm way too young. I can't do that. It's not for me right now, but I will come back to it one day.
Is this because through some form of prescience he knew that he hadn't done Flash Gordon yet?
Well, indeed, presumably. Yeah, presumably.
Also, an incredibly well-respected stage career, but,
He's a bit of a Daniel Day-Lewis, no? He's a bit of a...
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, not to that degree, but he's a bit of a... He's a bit of a, like a proper thesp. He's a proper...
Toured with the RSC,
Of the Bonds...
He trod the boots.
He drew the boots.
He did.
Indeed, yeah. Of the Bonds, he is the first legit actor, like actor with a capital A, guy that actually did it. Because Roger Moore was a TV actor.
Fair enough. Roger Moore was Moore on telly. Yeah. The other two were bodybuilders.
And
also occasionally a plank of wood.
Now, there's an amazing story that Edgar Wright tells about him making Hot Fuzz, which is that he... and he puts it so perfectly, which is like... When you're James Bond for life, it's like being the president of the United States.
I can see that, yeah.
So when you were making Hot Fuzz, people just turned up all the time to talk to get Timothy Dalton to sign autographs because he is James Bond. If you are James Bond once, you are James Bond forever, you know. Especially when it's this kind of longevity that you pick it up and you do it forever. You do. So he turned it down. Sam Neill.
Oh.
Screen tested, did the From Russia with Love.
I'm pretty sure that he
audition.
Is definitely a Sir Sam.
Dr. Alan Grant did it.
Dr.
Alan
Sam
Grant.
Neill.
No, Dr. Alan Grant. Dr. Alan Grant did the screen test, did the From Russia with Love audition, and was offered the part.
What?
And he was like, nah, I'm all right.
Okay.
Nah, I'm all right. Now, FYI, by the way, BT Dubs. Also, check out Sam Neill's Twitter because it's the best because he lives in New Zealand or Australia or wherever he lives. I think he's Australian actually, but wherever he lives,
I was gonna say he's from
and he
New
lives,
Zealand.
He lives on a pig farm in New Zealand that he's bought with his monies from Jurassic Park, I would assume, and it's a pig farm and vineyard. So all he does is neck wine all day and just sit on Twitter. It's the best.
Right.
Anyway,
Sam Neill has turned down James Bond.
So he's turned it down.
Which, again, you can kind of see because, I mean, this is going to be a recurring theme, right? So I'm guessing...
People don't want to be typecast, right? They don't want to be locked in for, like, 10
that,
years.
But I'm guessing that... I mean, Bond was kind of... Was Bond still in its heyday?
And don't forget that Roger Moore had been locked in for 12 years, right?
Yeah.
So people are thinking, I don't want to do that for 12 years.
Yeah.
That's a mental amount of time to play one
turkey
role.
Neck
a turkey neck. Exactly. Yeah.
So...
So Brosnan was cast and then had to legit walk out at the last minute.
They phoned a Shakespearean board.
Yes, they
thriller.
Phoned a legit, like, London theatre actor.
Was he London or Robert?
Who is massively Welsh. And by massively Welsh, I mean he's brilliant and I love these films, but they're so good that every time he gets a bit impassioned, he goes, oh, hello, hello, hello. And he goes, oh. Like suddenly sounds is so good. Every time he has to express emotion that's above talking like this, I can talk like this because I'm English and that's fine. And as soon as he has to talk loud, he goes, it's so good. I shouldn't shout into the mic about that, I'm fine. But yes, so he made Living Daylights and License to Kill.
Yeah.
What's your favourite of the two, Mr. Rob?
Hang on.
Oh, well,
we don't get to dive into it that fast. We get to, firstly, analyse his character. And I can do this because there's only two movies, so it's not like we're cutting a load of crap out. And I would say that as an avid fan of the original books,
sure,
Dalton is the closest to Bond as written, even after he was rewritten.
Closer to Craig, even? You think he's closer than Craig?
Craig comes close.
I think... I agree with you, actually. I know I'm questioning you, but I agree with you because I think that Dalton is... He really, like, embodies the gentleman spy. And in terms of, like, the gentleman assassin, essentially. He's a cold-blooded killer, needs to do the job. But also, he's a classy motherfucker.
But he is fundamentally... I mean, what we get in Living Daylights, and then obviously Overkill in License to Kill,
is
you get to see the dark side of a man who, until recently, was cracking wise and driving a hovercraft gondola through the city.
Sure. But I think that...
He brought some depth.
That's very intentional. It's very intentional that they did that. And also, you know, in the first one, if you notice, he doesn't, like, bang a load of babes because the AIDS crisis was at its peak in the 80s, or as we know it now, there's a shitload of people who got AIDS. So it was the AIDS crisis that never ended, I guess. But anyway, he wasn't so promiscuous in the first one. Like, in Living Daylights, it's so good. So they do the security check in Gibraltar. And they get the double O's to go in and check.
Well, the double O's have to basically try and break into the Gibraltar military base.
Yeah, yeah.
They're up against the SAS.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you get this amazing sequence, this amazing opening sequence, and it's all super, super serious and super dark.
Yeah.
The SAS turn out to be a bit shit.
And so good, like, he's in the back of the van, it's all about the he jumps out, he gets the parachute, he parachutes
on
the
back
to
of the lightweight Series 3 Land Rover.
Yeah, indeed. Oh, nice.
I may have watched this film a few times.
And then parachutes down onto the boat, and it's such a good cold open before The living daylights.
Right, we're now getting into...
We're now getting into me singing the songs.
He only made two films. So we can basically say, which one's our favourite?
But I, we've already talked about it. Living Daylights.
Right, Living Daylights. Which one is our not favourite? The other one.
So while we're talking about that, I do want to qualify what we're talking about in terms of Bond films. There aren't any Bond films that I don't like. It is like having 24 babies. Some of them are uglier than others. And some of them have invisible cars in them. But I love them all. I love them all.
You're going to make a fantastic parent.
Especially if they drive an invisible car. But, you know, I love all of them. I really do. And even the Brosnan ones, which are banana stupid. But
we're
which
coming
we'll get
on
to
them.
Which we'll come to. But it's the same as Living Daylights and License to Kill. License to Kill gets a bit sillier because Living Daylights is the only one which is not true, actually, because License to Kill is a 15, and everything else is a 12 or a 12A or a PG or whatever. But this is their first attempt at making Bond gritty. I hate that fucking term. Gritty and real and whatever. But it was, what, like, so this was like, when this came out, like 1987 was the first one? So that's like 20 years before Batman Begins came out. Like, they were really trying to...
Gritty hadn't quite been defined yet.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, and I really think they tried.
And I think they would have been better received now than they would have been then. I mean, when you watch that Everything or Nothing documentary, fucking Timothy Dalton is amazing. Because he keeps saying, we were doing it! We were doing it! We were doing what they want now, but no one was understanding. He's Pakistani. People don't realise that, but he's Pakistani.
It's a risk with the Wong accent.
It's really easy to go common into that one.
But I mean, the thing is, I can take that point because we have said this before, that actually, if you watch License to Kill, it was very poorly received.
Which is bananas.
Well, it is and it isn't.
But I think that's
It is and it isn't because some of the dialogue is clunky and shit.
But it's a Bond film. It's going to be.
Well, no, because none of the dialogue in Living Daylights is clunky or shit. There are some puns that make you go, oh,
and
really?
It's a bit like License to Kill is a bit much. They parachute into the wedding and everything like that.
It's not even that. It was just the fact that basically it wasn't what people expected from a Bond film, and therefore there was nothing there to forgive all of the other crap that went on.
But that's it. I think that's the problem they have with a lot of the Bond movies, is that to kind of reinvent or modernize the franchise is very difficult because you have a lot of the audience who's those like solidly behind the last Bond.
This is why,
like, to go from Moore to Dalton, I mean, it's so, as Bonds, they're so different. They're so different. They're definitely the same character, but it's so different. And there's two totally different films. I mean, Benicio del Toro in License to Kill, you know, give a nice honeymoon, you know. They raped her to death. That's the inclination. That's the implied thing
and
of that
reality.
Movie. It's really fucked up. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So fucked up.
I think the thing is, License to Kill is one of those movies that it was close to being what they wanted it to be. They just missed a bit because they didn't know how to make that kind of film.
It feels like they were trying to make Casino Royale, but they were trying to make Casino Royale 10 years too early.
Yeah,
and I don't think the public wasn't even ready.
It was bang on point. It's just the rough edges are too rough.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Robert Davi would still have flopped, but actually,
there's a reason License to Kill is not a cult classic.
Yeah.
And it's because, frankly, bits of it are just a bit shit.
To go back to the movie that actually we both prefer, our favourite movie, is Living Daylights. So it's based on a short story where, you know, the beginning of the film? Where he's the sniper and he takes out her, he shoots the rifle.
That's not the beginning of the film, but yes.
Yeah, right at the beginning of the movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Celloist.
On Gibraltar.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. So, no, that's License to Kill, no?
No.
All right, so I'm confusing them. But you know the bit when he is shooting her?
So thereafter, he is taken to Russia to basically save the life of a Russian politician.
Yeah.
The Secretary of Defense, I think. Doesn't really matter.
He's just some defector, basically.
And she has been hired to assassinate him. He doesn't realize, and he doesn't kill her.
Yes. He
shoots
a rifle
at him. The Dalton gets a lot of stick for.
That's the original, the story. That's the whole story.
Oh, is that
the whole story is he only kills professionals.
Mm.
he'll kill a sniper from Russia without a moment's notice, without any kind of worry at all, but he can tell that she's not a professional, she's just some woman.
Well, that's because she had the gun the wrong way around.
Well, indeed. But he can tell that she doesn't want to do it, so he just shoots the rifle. So it's a short story, originally written essentially to humanise him slightly, away from him being this cold-edged fucking frankly, fucking piece of shit that's real, you know, like a blunt instrument, as Judy Dench describes it.
And what we then go into, in film terms, is a true Bond. It's a romp. It's amazing.
It is a romp, yeah.
There's only one scene that I don't like.
Go on. Well, what scene?
Seriously, snowboarding a cello across the border.
No, and I always hated that, but I actually quite like it now.
I like the set piece.
Nothing to declare!
Yeah, no.
I quite like it. It's silly. There's a bit of silliness.
They have my favourite Bond car.
Oh, ever. Yeah. The V8 Volante.
Oh.
Oh, no, I agree. Oh. The ski numbers that come out the side, the spiked wheels.
And the fact that that car literally gets probably, 9 minutes of
screen time. Yeah, no, absolutely.
It's
becomes such, it's amazing. It becomes such an iconic car in such a small amount of time. It's such a sexy business.
I suppose the other thing is, it does do a little bit of kind of like, I mean, Bond's always bounced around the globe and what have you, but they take it to extremes. How many countries they're in that movie?
Are they really in that one?
Yeah.
It's mostly Russia, no?
Well, Russia, Afghanistan.
Oh, no, they do, yeah, because of Art Malik at the end, of course.
Yeah, I mean, there is a slightly awkward moment, whereas you pointed out, James Bond is apparently very good friends with the Mujahideen.
Yeah, so he teams up with the Mujahideen with Art Malik, who later become the Taliban. But that's fine. I mean, whatever.
At the time, though, they are destroying heroin. As opposed to just.
But they're also fighting
it.
The Russians, so that was fine or something. let's gloss over that one. Do you remember those moments I say we'll gloss over?
Yeah.
That might be one of
the,
them.
The politics of Bond in that particular. Yeah. There are some amazing set pieces, and they are amazing. I mean, the whole sequence in the Hercules, where he's.
Sure, to, yeah, yeah.
You know,
Christos off the back,
of
course.
That is brilliant. There's some really good horse stunt work.
And like the Jeep off the back of the Hercules, it lands on a parachute and then straight into the wheels and stuff. Yeah.
Whilst they were trying to reinvent Bond to make it a bit more gritty, a bit shorter, and a bit more Welsh, they also stayed true to their roots. He gets some good gadgets.
He does. He does, actually. Yeah, he does
in both of them, in fact, in both movies.
Well, there's the.
Well, let's start with Living Daylights.
All right, well, let's start with Living Daylights.
Where he's up against a mad American arms dealer. And pretty much the takeaway gadget from that film is his key finder.
So good. So good.
Which was a real thing, right? Everybody could buy them in
Of course, like the key finder.
In the 80s.
Yeah. So just to find my iPhone of the 80s. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
His explodes and puts out stun gas.
Yeah, like depending how you whistle, if you whistle Rule Britannia, you know.
I think given the number of times that my television accidentally activates Alexa, I'm not sure that would be a safe thing to carry around.
But do you know what's amazing about this movie is that you know that bit where they smuggle the Russian guy out of Russia, basically.
Pig? What is pig?
What is pig, exactly, yeah. So that thing is called the scouring pig.
Yeah.
So that is, apparently, that's a legit actual thing that was used to... Why am I telling you this if you already know?
Well, because they don't.
It was called scouring pig. And it was meant to just clean the inside of the pipe.
Yeah.
But supposedly in the Bondian world, they just put a person in there and they pop in.
Also, you do get some amazing moments where...
And that girl, that woman grabs face into the boobs. What kind of girl do you think I am? Like,
it's you do get a full-on salute to the might of the British Empire. Yeah. You get the Harrier jump jet coming out. If that isn't a fuck you to the Russians, I do not know
But no, absolutely. Any film with a Harrier jump jet in is a middle finger to all of our allies and enemies. Because do you remember that time there was the Harrier jump jet?
Yeah,
it can just take off the ground, just vertically. Up. So you know,
it can land vertically.
Suck
as well.
The biggest bag of dicks, Russia, I guess, or someone.
And in Living Daylights, we have a couple of cool things. Living Daylights. License to Kill, the other one. We have a couple of cool things, but the most cool of all is not the exploding toothpaste.
Not the what?
The exploding toothpaste.
Oh, yeah.
That's not cool. Nor is it the laser beam Polaroid camera.
Let's start weirdly.
For a dark movie.
Because now we're doing gritty realism. We have to disguise everything as a real thing that you might carry with you. Like, you've always got a packet of toothpaste in your stomach, like in your pocket. That's super weird.
But what Dalton does get to play with is something that is actually, fair enough, ridiculous. It's a film camera that transforms itself into a sniper rifle.
Yes.
However, the element of that might be interesting to our techie listeners is that only he can use it because it has built-in fingerprint recognition.
Sure, right? So that's a thing that's like, that's become a bigger thing recently.
Yeah.
Where it's been like a fingerprint gun, like in, is it Spectre or something like that? When it's the Walther PPK, but it could only recognise his handprint.
Well, they revisited exactly the concept in Spectre. You've also got recent real-life events.
Yeah.
A kid on the internet, of course, apparently added a fingerprint reader to a 3D-printed gun. The smart gun is becoming a legit thing.
Oh, yeah, as it Bond fucking just, should be, actually. You know, that'd be great. That'd stop a load of kids accidentally shooting their parents and whatnot.
Given when we're
this has all been a surprise.
When we're recording this, we should probably take a moment to say that actually, seriously, gun control, it's not hard. Work it out.
Well, this has all been a surprise, actually, but this has suddenly become a super political podcast.
No, that's my only political point.
We spent a long time.
My only political point.
You're quite right.
And, yeah. Anyway, Dalton was polarising.
I think so.
Who didn't like him?
Lots of people.
Was
again,
one of them George
like
Lazenby?
Always, like, well, yeah, George Lazenby. I've got a review here that was like, he's not Australian enough.
Use the internet?
He was just, no, George Lazenby's too busy getting laid to know how to use the internet. I mean, you know, but yeah.
It's Amazon One Star Reviews.
I really did struggle, actually.
Okay.
For one-star reviews. Like
seems
I say,
unlikely.
I picked earlier. So, Larry. May 2016.
Larry.
He says, Timothy Dalton, enough said. Actually, fuck you, Larry. Timothy Dalton is a fucking national treasure, mate.
Does
wrong.
He go on to say anything else?
No, he just says, Timothy Dalton, enough said. Full stop. He's a fucking idiot. Good Lord. I'm being attacked by the barman, which, to be honest, has been not a short amount of time coming.
He thought he was setting you on fire.
Not the fire safe.
And M. Stein, November 2007. The reason I've added him is M. Stein is the initials of Marvin Stein from the DC superhero. Okay.
Yeah.
And that is, not only are the effects lame, but the writing is terrible, and the acting is only slightly better. And I would like to say to you, M. Stein, or Martin Stein, as I know your real name is, because, you know, you're in that DC comic that I read, go fuck yourself, mate. Fucking suck a bag of dicks. Really? The acting is bad?
I think
the effects are bad? What effects? So fuck off, M. Stein. Sorry, mate.
The one criticism you cannot level to a rather trained Shakespearean actor is he doesn't know how to act.
That's what I'm saying.
If you were talking about Lazenby,
you watch yourself, Dudley, because we are about to have a falling out. We're about to have the end of the podcast. So, the next part, it would appear, probably Pierce Brosnan. Pierce Brosnan. I can't even say his name. Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan.
The name's Bond.
James
Bond. Before we dive into it, let's give him his due. Pierce Brosnan came back after a 6-year break.
Sure, yeah.
Because License to Kill tanked.
Yeah.
There were probably some
issues. That's not the reason. What happened was that Pathé and UA, United Artists, had a big to-do about television rights and how it was going to be shown.
Blah, 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 blah. Any more Bond.
There was a whole bunch of blah, 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 blah. And eventually, Timothy Dalton waited till like 94 or something and just fucking, it was like, fuck this. This is too much of a bullshit. I'm just going to walk away. So Pierce Brosnan had met Cubby Broccoli back in there.
Oh, yeah, because he was considered for the role.
Indeed.
Got the role. And then couldn't do it because he was too busy being a man of steel.
Too busy being Remington Steel, exactly. So he was pulled in, and then it was a bit of a no-brainer. So he'd done the... As is the case, he'd done the From Russia with Love audition scene, but he got pulled in. He got pulled in, and it was a no-brainer that nobody else kind of was going for it. Did he really?
No,
this is what you heard. Oh no, he didn't. He didn't have to. He was such a smooth fit that he actually was like, yeah, he really was. We've wanted you for years.
You haven't made Mamma Mia.
We've had to make do.
We still have respect for you.
We've had to make
Hollywood community.
We've had to make do with Timothy Dalton. He's not made
do.
A very ill-advised musical about ABBA or some silly bullshit. You're quite right. And yeah, so it took a very long time. So
at Cannes
in
19...
Indeed, it took a long time. There was a lot of fucking about.
Right,
So in Cannes in 1990, they put a poster up of Dalton and the film, and it was going to be a new film, and it was fine, but then it was a big lawsuit, and like I say, eventually he was brought in. So in 94, after all of the UA Pathé lawsuit had actually eventually finished, GoldenEye was released.
Yes.
First Brosnan.
First Bond Brosnan, in 6 years.
Indeed, yeah. And Brosnan and Bond was not a thing that the world was used to anymore. He seemed a bit archaic. He seemed a bit sexist. He seemed a bit oldie-woldy, if you will, which is why they gave him... Goddamn, Judi Dench. Moment of respect for M.
Well, yeah, and to be fair, prior to this, M had been played by two people.
Bernard Lee and then Robert Brown.
And they were consistently, I mean, to be fair, they were old school.
Very much fusty, musty.
Yeah, they were the like Cambridge, the Oxbridge Secret Service, blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And I think adding Judi Dench at the time was definitely a antidote to the sexism of Bond as a character. To make his boss a woman and such a fucking badass.
And she does own him.
And right? She definitely does, yeah, 100%. She owns several Bonds.
Is it GoldenEye or...
GoldenEye is her first appearance,
The World Is Not
yeah.
Enough, where you get the... or Tomorrow Never Dies. Which one has the bourbon sequence?
GoldenEye.
GoldenEye, where he walks into the office and he's like, your predecessor used to keep a bottle of whatever the fuck is that men drink.
I prefer
drink.
Bourbon. Yeah.
And she turns around and says, I prefer bourbon. Yeah. Doesn't even ask, just pours him one. It's like, you, sir, are
you're
putting
one,
your
mate.
Fucking
place. No, it definitely does. And
amazing.
Like, and it gets to the point where we'll talk about this with Craig, I guess, a little bit, but she talks about how... Does she have this conversation with Brosnan, actually, about how you're a blunt instrument?
No.
Are you a holdover from the Cold War?
Yes. She does. It's the same. It's the same speech.
You're a misogynist,
it's
kind
the
of.
Same scene.
Yeah, you're a misogynist holdover from the Cold War, and I don't need you, kind of thing.
Because I mean,
but
this
actually,
is the thing is that she's presented.
And then, as she's walking away, my favourite bit: come back alive. Like she cares. She cares. No, she likes him. No, I think she's got a soft
knows
spot.
How much
she's got a soft spot for
she
Bond.
She would have to
she's
do.
Got a soft spot for Bond. She's got a soft spot.
I mean, the thing is that she is presented as a modern intelligence. Officer as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And this is, let's not forget, Bond works for the Secret Service.
She's not a figurehead. She's a legit actual... Yeah. She feels like she used to be an agent.
This isn't, Le Carre, old men sitting around rooms smoking.
This
is a modern, functioning...
She feels involved.
SIGINT-style operation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's... I mean, of all the things that GoldenEye gives us, other than Sean Bean being the fucking best, and also Xenia on a top... Her name is Honor Top. And also Alan Cumming, like, clicking, I am invincible! Anyway, beyond that.
Beyond
all of that amazing.
Probably some of the best set characters.
Beyond
set
all
of
that. Like
the Bond franchise.
But
in
I would
one
say
movie,
beyond some of the best sets, but maybe not the best set pieces. Why would the barrels be racked in such a way that if he shoots that lock, they all pop out of that thing? They all fire out, right?
That's how you rack barrels, Mike.
Is it? Are they spring-loaded?
Have you spoken to a Cooper about this?
Spring-loaded, very, very flammable, explosive barrels.
Get professional
spring-loaded.
Advice.
Spring-loaded. Seems weird to me, but okay, that's fine. But, but yeah, but The biggest thing that Goldfinger, I was going to say, then GoldenEye has given us is Judi Dench. And in, I mean, the fact that she last bonds, like, when they get to Daniel Craig, they're like, right, Die Another Day is too much. We're going to reboot the whole franchise. We're definitely going to change everything. I mean, other than Judi Dench, obviously. Other than her, everything else is going to change other than her being amazing. You know, yep. It's,
and getting more amazing and more badassery. The one thing I do have to say very quickly about GoldenEye before we move on, because there are many, many films and none of them are as good as GoldenEye.
No, I love GoldenEye. I love that movie.
The Bond girl in GoldenEye, not on a top.
The other one.
Yeah, I'm sorry, my wife's going to kill me if I do not mention that.
Natalia Simonova by Isabella Scorbucco.
Scorbucco is, in fact, Polish.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
Yes.
No, indeed, I've got a Polish wife too, and that gets pointed out to
me. The Poles make a big
well.
Point of pride about this. They gloss over the fact she spends most of the movie playing a Russian.
Yeah.
In fact, all of the movie.
You mean like all Polish actors of all time ever?
Orcs.
Who writes anybody. A Polish character? They definitely write a Russian character, and then they just get, you know.
Yeah.
Polish people are just cheaper to get a Polish actor.
No,
that's not like a political statement. It's just. No, oh, I've accidentally said something terribly bad.
Do you want to borrow my spade?
But the thing I love about GoldenEye the most is that I really changed the subject very quickly, is that I think it's one of the first Bonds that stars in media res. So it starts with him and Alex Trevelyan having that mission where they've got to blow up the tankers or whatever the fuck they're doing. And it's got to be 6 minutes and he sets the timer to 3 minutes because he knows they're not going to make it out and all that kind of stuff. Is there another Bond where it starts mid-mission? Because I don't think there is.
No, I didn't.
Look, I can think of. If the room can think of anything, then please.
To be fair, there
are,
I mean, there's a more where there's the more where he's escaping with the thing. He's snowboarding down the mountain. They're actually.
Oh
a
yeah, okay. No, yeah. No. I suppose actually that is true. They're normally up a mountain just so we can ski.
I think
for
the
a
trouble
bit.
Is
yeah,
it's really
true.
Easy when we're talking about Brosnan to focus on GoldenEye. We do have to look a bit further, I'm afraid.
Oh, no.
But the world was changing when GoldenEye was made. And the thing that I mentioned to you earlier that you're going to hate that I brought up is there an anti-British foreign policy sentiment in any other Bond film?
No. Well, not by
so
the heroes.
So whether or not they should have written off the Cossacks or whatever.
I'm guessing
I mean, who knew that Cossacks were a thing? That's fine, whatever.
Pro-British intelligence.
But who actually... Was there a moment when British people were written off?
No.
Good. I'm glad we can cut this moment out that I've said it and it was super forced.
No, it's staying in. Right, so, Mike, what is your favourite Brosnan Bond?
All right. We've actually cocked up here because we were talking about it because actually it was GoldenEye. Obviously yeah. It's GoldenEye.
Right, mine was GoldenEye.
Yeah.
A couple of quick things. Firstly, the GoldenEye computer game.
Obvious. Obvs.
Needs naming. It was...
I mean, fucking hell.
If you were a teenager late 90s...
It starts like the film that you come down out of the toilet, out of the roof, into the toilet.
Yeah.
It always starts the same way.
It's amazing.
So good. I mean, that's stupid.
But at the same time...
Yeah.
Let's think briefly, because he did other movies. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that actually as Brosnan's Bond career progressed, so the quality of the films reduced.
I love World Is Not Enough. Nope, no I don't. I love Tomorrow Never Dies. I always confuse the two, and which is part of the problem. I love Tomorrow Never Dies.
Just to be
in
clear,
Hong
Tomorrow
Kong,
Never Dies is...
Elliot
Michelle,
Carter, Michelle Yao.
Michelle Yao.
BMW motorbike under the helicopter, yeah. All that kind of business.
And the BMW driving around the car
and
park.
Elliot Carter, yeah, indeed. And
scored
all,
by David Arnold.
And
the propeller heads.
First one by David Arnold. Not by the propeller heads, but he made himself famous by making that remix album. I love Elliot Carver. All he's trying to do is get printing rights in China. That's the entirety of the plot. All he's trying to do is get exclusive printing rights in China. Totally not foreseeing the internet of any variety. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Later on, what have we got? We've got...
The World Is Not Enough, after that.
Yeah, who's the baddie in The World Is Not Enough?
Not Sophia. I was going to say Sophia Loren, but it's, you know, she was kidnapped, and it's Robert Carlyle.
No, it's Elektra What's-Her-Chops.
Exactly, Elektra What's-Her-Chops.
Yeah, you've
nailed
it's
it.
Robert Carlyle
yeah.
being kind of
and
crap.
His name is the French for fox, and also there's a bullet going further into his brain, and the further it goes in, he can't feel pain anymore or something.
I mean, literally, I could do that surgery with a magnet to a steady hand.
That is the first movie that I went to see at the cinema with my dad. So my mum had always taken me to cinema for years before. So I went to the cinema to see that with my dad. And we came out and my dad was like, it's just not Bond. He kills her in cold blood at the end. That's just not Bond. That's not what he does. That's not the point of Bond. That's not the point of Bond. And over the years, I could not disagree with him more, quite frankly.
But to be fair...
And then Die Another Day. My wife's favourite film of all time.
Die Another Day has some good bits. It has some bad bits.
It does. And it's, I mean, all the North Korea stuff at the beginning, where they're trading things, is actually okay.
It's weirdly and then the specific second, in the timeline.
And the second that Madonna song starts, then it starts to go to pop.
I like the Madonna song.
You like the Madonna? Do you seriously? Yeah. But yes, Die Another Day is a blemish.
It's not a blemish.
And also, I love it. I love it. Like I said, I've said
it
to you before.
It has some great shit. It has some bad shit.
I said this on the podcast CGI. Before. I love all of these films like they're my children.
It has some of the worst CGI in the world. Yeah. When he's surfing.
But also, Ice Hotel.
The Ice Hotel.
So good.
The
I love
car
it.
Chase.
And also, is it the satellite that burns a hole through the minefield in Korea so that the army can march through between North and South Korea?
Because.
That's the best.
Yay, comrade.
Because what? It's so good.
But.
I've pretended to be English, and I've based my personality on
the
you.
The car chase, Mike.
On the ice.
Where we pitch the Aston Martin against the Jaguar. Mm. And this brings us to something that we have not really massively discussed, which is, you know, the watches are all good.
But the cars are the cars.
The cars are the cars. The cars and the frankly, cars. That film...
Now, I've told you that last year I went to the Bond in Motion exhibit in London, which I highly recommend to all of our listeners. If you like Bond, you should go. I got to touch all them cars, and my only problem with it was that they wouldn't let me sit in them, because as much as Die Another Day drives me fucking crazy, and I still love it, but it drives me fucking crazy, to see those two cars, battle damage, scratches on the roof because they were skidding upside down on the ice, got the rockets out, all that kind of stuff... It's Bond taken, like, times 100. Bond to the nth degree, you know? It's so crazy that it's brilliant. It's absolutely fucking brilliant. Also, by the way, same iceberg where Liam Neeson and What's-His-Face had a fight in Batman Begins.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, same place. Yeah, same place.
Guessing they're just, like, Hollywood.
It's just super picturesque and an iceberg, so they all go and do that. Yeah, amazing. But no, those cars are incredible.
In terms of Bond cars, come on, what have we had?
It's got to be DB5.
No, we've had the DB5. We talked about that.
The V8 Vantage is the one that I want the most because it's a sexy motherfucker.
The Vantage is kind of cute.
I'm bringing my voice down low because I know how very sexy that car is. But the DB5 actually is probably the best one, isn't it? You're gonna blow my mind now. You're going to say something. Go on. What's yours?
Well,
you want the Lotus Esprit?
No.
The underwater Lotus?
The problem with the Lotus
that one
is
as well.
It's a shit car. I'm saying, well, it's a Lotus, but oh my God, is it date?
Yeah, indeed. No, indeed.
I mean, the DB5 is timeless.
The DB5 is a classic.
The V8 Volante is timeless.
Yeah,
Not everybody's cup of tea.
I agree, but I think the DB5 is more like timeless fucking masterpiece.
Yeah, I think that's mostly because it was in James Bond from the third movie.
Yeah, which is fine, and I'm fine with that reason.
The Lotus looks like a car of the time.
Yeah.
And also, you know how they call the gyrocopter Little Nelly?
Sure.
Can you guess what they call the Lotus Esprit S1?
Have we not already had this conversation? But what's great about it is I forget.
Oh, yeah.
No, what?
They called it Wet Nelly.
Wet Nelly?
Yeah.
Gave it the old Wet Nelly, mate.
Hey.
Don't worry about that.
Well,
she wasn't sure, but then I gave her the Wet Nelly, and she was well away.
I mean, let's march forward. I mean, gadgets in these cars are crazy.
Of course. I mean, that
has been insane. They're off the charts.
Of course, yeah, of course.
You've got, I used to have
tire shredders, smoke screens, bulletproof screens, ejector seats.
Oh.
Did you have that old, like, yeah, I've still got it, like the old DB5 model? You press the back bumper and it makes the thing pop out the top. Yeah, of course.
And you could pull out very carefully the tire shredders.
Yeah, of course.
And it had little sunroof and little guy who sat in it. Have you still got the little guy?
I have got a little guy.
Good.
It might be a second gen little guy because I might have bought it off eBay. But yeah, I've got a little guy.
You bought somebody else's little guy to fill your.
I bought a little guy off eBay. I know what I'm saying. Thanks for chopping that up, wow. Internet.
We then get a weird moment because when Brosnan comes in, somehow BMW have cut underneath Aston Martin.
Yeah, how did they manage
bought
that?
The product super placement rights for vehicles.
Super fucking weird.
So we get a Z3 that does fuck all.
He drives it around the car park with a Sony.
No, a Z3 in GoldenEye.
Oh, yeah.
He literally just drives it a bit.
But what one is it he drives around with a touchpad on the
That
on the
is
park.
The BMW 750i.
The wire clipper is exactly
drives
the right...
It on... is that a Sony Ericsson or a Nokia?
It's a Sony Ericsson.
It's a Nokia.
Oh, it's a Nokia. Okay,
yeah. Which, frankly, is kind of fun, except... Don't know if you ever tried to do anything remote control in your life. It's quite hard.
Do you know
hard.
That everyone has an iPhone? Nokia are not a thing anymore.
Well, yeah,
are they a thing anymore? Are they a thing? Well, you're the tech guy.
I think Microsoft bought them.
Microsoft bought Nokia.
Yeah, and then...
Oh, so they're fucked. They're proper fucked.
By the way, Nokia are gone.
Yeah.
So he drives the fucking giant-ass executive BMW, which has a voice which says things like, please put on your seatbelt. And not in the car.
Oh, it's got the German voice.
Teutonic bitch.
She loves it. He loves it because, you know, he loves it because, like, it's a woman telling him what to do.
The best thing that happens to that car is he crashes it through the Avis car hire window.
And the Q is dressed up as an Avis representative, which is so good.
Yeah.
That's so
good. I would like to know how much Avis paid.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
I would assume probably slightly less than Heineken paid for him to drink when he was dead. You know, when he's dead in Skyfall.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we've still got a whole bond left. Fucking hell. You know that bit when he's lying in the bed drinking a bottle of Heineken? Apparently, it is crazy how much they paid.
Yeah.
But we'll come on to that. Anyway.
And in terms of cars, we then get back to the real time because Aston Martin realised a couple of things.
Actually, synonymous.
Hang on. Aston Martin realised they are synonymous.
Yeah.
And they were able to make the deal that Rolex weren't.
Why did Rolex not? Like, we don't need advertising. We're fucking Rolex.
I'm guessing on Omega came down like, to cash monies and also the fact that Rolex currently sponsored
so
the
as
Formula
we, as we
One,
were saying earlier.
Which cost them quite a lot.
As we were saying, Omega came in with Brosnan.
Yep.
That's when that became the official the watch of Bond. I'm tapping my watch, which is a... £18 Timex, but it's on the same NATO strap that he wears. Shut up. But yes, that's when it became the actual official watch. Are you wearing a legit Omega right now?
I'm wearing a Tissot.
Let's be serious.
It's made by Omega.
Doesn't count.
Same factory.
Doesn't count. Does it say Omega on it? Doesn't count.
What?
Also,
next time.
Now that we've won an award, why don't we buy ourselves an Omega watch?
Because the cash prize wasn't there.
It wasn't a thing, and also I need to buy a house next. Anyway, let's... moving on.
Aside from cars, Brosnan did have some fairly cool gadgetry.
Yes.
He returned to a theme that Bond had for a while with the explosive lighter.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Mostly because, frankly, you could probably make a light that explodes. By definition, all lighters could explode.
It's a little small box that you can make go bang, of course.
Yeah. One of the cool things that he did twice was smart glasses.
Oh, yeah, he did.
So he does the whole X-ray perv glass
thing.
That
is cool. It makes everything go purple and also see everyone, but not too pervy, because you can see the ladies...
You can see their underwear.
Yeah, indeed. You can see the ladies in their underwear.
Because that's how X-rays work.
But not, like, straight up see a cooch. You can see the underwear.
The underwear is metallic.
But not be like, oh, there's them lips. Like, yeah. It's very classy. Like I am. Very
again,
classy.
Again, Brosnan, by the way, had a credit card lockpick. In the
did he as well?
Enough. Yeah,
totally. Oh, did he as well? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which
okay,
is why it wasn't in my notes from before. It's because it's here.
Because it's here, yeah.
God damn it. And in, I think this was the one with the oil and Robert Carlyle. Is that the
Tomorrow
one? Is not enough? Tomorrow Never Dies?
Yeah.
No, it's not Tomorrow Never Dies. Tomorrow Never Dies is the newspaper guy.
Well, we need to.
Anyway,
what
gadget
are you talking about?
He actually has a ski jacket that when he pulls a toggle,
that is
turns
tomorrow
into
never
a zoo.
That is Tomorrow Never
Dies.
No,
tomorrow
sorry,
never
that's World is Not Enough, because it turns into a big ball.
Yeah, and
let's
is
start again?
Legitimately technology that people are working on, right? This is
the really?
Anti-avalanche technology.
Because John Cleese gets a huge thing. John Cleese gets to represent it.
Whilst we're on the subject of John Cleese, we do have to raise our glasses.
We have to talk about John Cleese.
No, we have to raise our glasses to Q.
Damn right, Desmond Llewellyn. Represent. 1995,
the longest running recurring James Bond character.
And for good reason. And for very good reason.
He
actually he was on the way to a convention. So he was always paid as a day player. So he never got paid as a big money actor. They always essentially paid him as a day player because he could always do all of his lines and his scenes in one day. So they didn't have to pay him very much. But he made a lot of money from going to conventions and, you know, being Q, essentially. So on the way to one of these numbers, one of these Qs, one of these conventions, he was 85, and an Audi, apparently, hit him head on, hit him smash straight on, and he died. He was 85. Such an old age to die in a car crash is bananas, but really, I honestly think... And I don't know if you agree. I know Ben Whishaw is in there now, and it's great that he's such a young guy, and it's so great. But do you think that he'd be in there? Because I feel like they'd still have him in there.
No, he...
I feel like they'd still have him in there.
He'd already retired. I mean, you get that amazing scene in The World Is Not Enough where he says to Bond, I always taught you two things.
Never let him see you bleed.
And always have an escape route.
Yeah.
And
he goes down to the pool table.
And yeah. Cleese has already been introduced, and Cleese is there.
And I think that's a smart move as well, because John Cleese as a replacement is, I mean that's a smart move, right? I mean, John Cleese.
He gets to introduce the Vanish.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
But by and large was not suitable for what we'll come onto in a moment, which is...
No, I agree. I don't think...
But modern that's what I'm, Bond.
Shit, sorry. That's what I'm saying, is that I don't think that actually he would be good to carry over to the Daniel Craig era, but Desmond Llewellyn would have been. I think that everybody, like, with the Daniel Craig era, everybody's got to take it with a pinch of salt because we're rebooting, but we've got to have, like, some stuff that we know, that we love, that we appreciate to carry over. And I think that Desmond Llewellyn would have been okay to carry over. I mean, the man would have been 90, but now we need to do the proper one-star reviews.
It's Amazon one-star reviews.
I mean, it's so hard to do these because everybody loves James Bond films all the time, and it is quite crazy.
You sound like my dad.
No, I know. I'm like making
really
apologies for a film already.
Oh, everybody loves James Bond. It's amazing.
And the first one I will do is by Jerry B from March 2016, and he says...
Jerry Bruckheimer.
I say Jerry B, and I say he. He might be a her, I don't know. He says, few buy guests in my home.
What?
Few buy guests in my home. One star.
Sorry,
few
what?
Buy guests in my home. Few buy a guest in my home.
Is that a bad thing?
I don't know.
Was the guest not invited?
One star, so it must have been pretty bad. It must have been pretty bad.
Maybe he's a collector.
And then the Jigsy. And that's how I'm saying their name, the Jigsy. I think it's like the Jigs, but I think it's like the Jigsy.
There's a J in there.
Two G's and several S's, so the Jigsy. March 2016. And he's got a very specific complaint about GoldenEye. Alan Cumming makes this movie so annoying. Super loser, misogynistic scenes. Great action. But AC, Alan Cumming, is a super loser. Classic irony, because he could spontaneously combust. Yes, perfect irony, because he could have spontaneously combusted in the film, I guess. I don't really understand
Not
that.
Really, he was frozen.
Alan Cumming makes this movie so annoying. Super loser and misogynistic scenes. Which I think is the point of his character, right?
Oh, he's a complete misogynist.
He's meant to be, that's the thing, he's meant to be unlikable, like a horrible, unlikable bloke, right? Great action, but Alan Cumming is a loser. Classic irony, because he could spontaneously combust. I mean, he could. He could also get abducted by aliens, and I don't really...
He could transforms.
I don't really get it. He's meant to be an arsehole, right?
He is. Now this one's tricky because this is our last Bond. No, it's our last Bond. It's not the last Bond, and I don't imagine
It would be. I hope not. Yeah, no.
It makes it kind of tough to introduce because
it's the most familiar. Maybe
he's the most recent, but also he's new and green and fresh, and they try to do rebooty shit.
As much as we say that Brosnan was our Bond growing up, but actually this one has been Bond for so long now that maybe this one is our Bond.
This was the first Bond where we could drink.
Yes, indeed. This is the Bond where we could like hammer down martinis and not feel like a piece of shit because actually he did drink as much as we did. Yeah,
which we have been doing. By the way, thank you, Carl.
Thank you, Carl. You're the best. Number one.
Hello?
Mr. White, we need to talk.
Who is this?
The name's Bond. James Bond.
So, Craig... And Craig comes in after a bit of a break, not 6 years. It's what, like three?
Yeah, and I think it's long enough that they knew that after Die Another Day, they knew that was the death knell. They knew
Die
that
Another
was...
Day died.
Indeed. No,
and
indeed.
So
no,
they
indeed.
Thought it's probably time.
And they knew that they needed to do something new or otherwise.
And also,
like,
Brosnan was really keen where to do you, something with
because
ABBA.
Where do you go from Invisible Car and Ice Hotel? Like, where do you go from there? It's like, you know what I mean? Like, well, the Bond thing has always been a thing.
And think about what you did.
And the Bourne movies have been a thing. So that was a big part of espionage thrillers of the Hollywood and that kind of stuff.
And bear in mind, he's coming from like the 60s, 70s style. Yeah. He's again, Le Carre driven, where it's all spycraft.
And they knew that.
And it's personality.
After the Invisible Car and all that kind of stuff, they couldn't rely on CGI anymore. So they wrote an opening of a film, which was two blokes running across cranes and doing free running, which was super popular at the time, super famous at the time. Same is. And two guys legit doing it. And two guys did legit do it. So
you know
they
that's
wrote...
not the opening to the movie.
Casino Royale.
Right?
No, well, it's not the actual opening, but it is the... For me, it is the opening and that they did...
So,
you know,
Casino Royale opening sequence sets
in
up...
In a well.
Well, firstly, it tells us it's a reset. It's a reboot. Yeah. Oh. We get to see Bond... Now played by a blonde British actor.
Which people went fucking crazy for as well.
Because apparently the colour of their hair matters. They set up like. He's been Welsh, Australian, and Scottish.
They set up websites like bondisnotblonde.com and like.
Just, no, but you know, he can be Welsh, Australian, or Scottish.
Let's play a game where you just fuck off and actually it'll be fine.
Except
you
he can't be Australian because he didn't really work.
No, indeed. No, exactly. Exactly. Why not be upset with those things?
You get to see Bond get his license to kill.
Yeah.
Get it in black and white so you know it's old timey.
Because you've got to have two kills to get the 00 status.
Yeah, but you get it in black and white so you're in a flashback.
Yeah, indeed,
I mean, because they no expense spent
amazing.
On this
so amazing. So when they were doing that, that whole thing was a set in like a soundstage. So all of the taps and everything were, and the urinals and everything were made out of rubber. So when he's like smacking his face against everything, it's like super pliable rubber.
Boing, boing, boing.
Exactly, exactly. It's like Roger Rabbit or something. It's so fucking like boing, 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 boing. So he's like, oh, it was so, he said it was so comfortable that he had to sell it as an actor that he was being hurt. Because actually it was just like boing, 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 boing. You can't see me. Because it's an audio podcast.
We get it. The boing
apparently,
noise.
He had to really sell it as an actor because, yeah. Brilliant, brilliant.
Hit me harder. But yeah, so then we have a new Bond.
Mm-hmm.
And we move into an amazing parkour scene.
Yes.
And it is amazing.
We have a new Bond, and we have a new Bond that is very different from the last Bond. New boss, same as the old boss, but it is still...
I've got to say, we've been there before.
They set the scene very well. They run across that incredible, like, running across the cranes and all that kind of stuff. I think the moment that it's set when he's the Bond, he is the Bond, is that that guy runs... And he jumps through the window, and Bond like smashes through the plaster wall.
I think this is the weird thing. I think that sets a tone.
I think that sets a tone.
I would say you hate that.
You hate that
in the first scene where he's talking to him, and Bond just shoots him in the face.
Yeah.
That for me sets the tone of what this Bond is all about.
But I think, like that coming through the wall feels like much more like.
He's visceral.
He starts the film as a blunt instrument, as a hammer, and he ends the film as a more finite,
sharpened.
Yeah,
hammer.
Exactly. He ends as like a slightly sharper kind of instrument, as opposed to just
he's like
hammering shit.
Pickaxe.
He is, I don't know.
Okay, right. Anyway, so Craig brought us back in with a bang, and actually manages to do. A whole bunch of shit that no Bond had done since, well, pretty much Connery. Pulls off a tux without looking dated.
He comes out of the water looking like Honey Rider.
Oh.
Looking like a pimp.
I'm not
looking like a pimp.
He does. There is a little bit of...
It's a sexy motherfucker.
And...
Comes out of the water looking like a fucking legit... Actually, which is quite interesting. Was quite nice and quite interesting that they've switched it round. That they make him the... focus of the sexuality of the like,
especially
of
given
guy.
That in the film that went before you had Jinx who pops out the water and they're all like oh my god,
and then she was in
James Bond has done another Ursula Andress and it's so boring, I mean, I've seen it before, and then they do it with Daniel Craig and I'm like oh my god, Daniel Craig
shaking
is wonderful,
off the hair. Shaking off the hair. But anyway, it's good.
And then we get into or back into what I should say the basis of Bond. He's gambling.
Yep, he is gambling. He's back in a day, yeah, he's absolutely.
He invents.
And he's being
the
hard boy that you know that he is. He's the blunt instrument that you expect from him. And then, so he introduced himself as the blunt instrument, and then he introduces the nuance of a character throughout the film.
I mean, this is the first,
I think,
the first film where you get any of Bond's backstory, Eva Green, on the TVR.
On the train, of course.
The very fast train, and she's trying to profile him, and he's profiling her.
He reads her, and she reads him, like, you're an orphan, straight into Oxford, all that kind of stuff. Like, she tells him his life story, and it tells us his life story, and it makes sense to us that he was a blank slate that's been programmed by the British government as James Bond. You know.
And then what we get is an amazing setup. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, Casino Royale is by and large, it's very much
set up.
There was nothing wrong with this film.
No, I agree. 100%. I mean that motor chase when he chases in the car and then he flips the car, which like inadvertently set a fucking world record.
Yeah,
world
record. The number of flips.
Like, you know, it was Casino Royale and those movies, the Daniel Craig movies, like, with perhaps the exception of Quantum of Solace. Have been a legit, like, love letter to the fans. Like, because I think Casino Royale is something that, if you've read the books and you've done all of that and you've watched all the films and you all that kind of business, you watch Casino Royale and there are enough nods to you as a fan that you love it, but also it's new enough and it's different enough that they're taking it in a new direction. I think that's very important.
So. There are more Daniel Craig films, 3 of them, to be precise.
Right.
Quantum of Solace, which I think we can all agree is shit.
Munich. Quantum of Solace, or Quantum of Solace, as some people call it, is a continuation of Casino Royale. Quantum of Solace is not a good film. It's not good, it's not enjoyable, of any variety. But if you watch it immediately after watching Casino Royale, It is works as a perfect continuation of a piece. So it works as one piece. It works very, very well. It is also one of the most artfully shot James Bond films. That car chase at the beginning of Quantum of Solace
is amazing.
Through the tunnel is absolutely fucking incredible.
And if I and were watching
it,
movies
it, and then it ends,
to get my degree in cinematography, I would love it. But I'm not. It's unentertaining, it's boring, it has pacing issues, plotting issues.
I agree with you. But if you watch it, as soon as Casino Royale finished,
was universally recognised as a terrible Bond film.
As soon as Casino Royale finished,
it gave us.
But it gave us Spectre and Skyfall is what it gave
Skyfall.
Us.
Skyfall.
Which is, I mean.
And Skyfall.
So we should say.
Skyfall is self-indulgent as fuck.
Of the two of us, our favourite films are. You said Casino Royale.
Yep, 100%.
For the Craig Bonds, and I said Skyfall.
Yep.
Now I said Skyfall because Skyfall is a love letter to the fans.
Yeah.
Is it stupid? Has it got massive plot plot holes? Is it just fucking dumb as fuck? Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. But also, have you seen Skyfall? Do you remember that time that Adele? I hate Adele. Seriously, that song is so amazing. Like, how do you outdo Shirley Bassey? That's ridiculous. It's fucking insane. It's fucking insane. And then Sam Smith had a go.
I suppose the thing with Casino Royale that we love so much is it's a return to form. And
sure.
By and large, that's then continued. We skip over Quantum of Solace.
And that informs the rest of the series of the films, because the things that people like inform inform that series. Yeah, sure.
But
okay,
what we
I gotcha.
A dark Bond.
But didn't we get that with Timothy Dalton?
We did, but his wife didn't get killed.
That's what I always say, is that I think people weren't ready.
I mean,
ready.
There was no Bond people worth recognising before
people,
he got his
people
wife
weren't ready for that then. They weren't ready for that then. They weren't ready for that in 1987, but they were ready for that 15 years later.
And they weren't even married.
You know? When it comes to Casino Royale and Spectre and Skyfall, and they were ready for that one-star review that I said earlier about how James Bond doesn't cry. But actually, maybe he didn't 20 years ago, but now actually he does. He does now. And actually, that's what we want to see.
No.
We want to see him have a humanity.
He got to do it once. And he got to do it once in Casino Royale, because that was critical to the to the formation of the character that we now know as James Bond.
So if the next
film
starts,
he doesn't cry is because he's cried out.
So if the next film starts and he's been away from the business or whatever, and they've been away from the business, he's been away, and now it's a Honor Magic Secret Service number. If that girl gets killed, and he's got to go on the revenge number, can you not see that?
No.
Can you not see that? I mean, I hope it doesn't happen, because that is cheap. It's super cheap, and I really don't hope it happens. It's super cheap, and I really don't want that.
We're at least two reboots away. At least, hopefully. However, what we
end up with is one more Craig, and then new director and new reboot. Sorry. Yeah. Go on. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I think one more Craig is good.
No.
Sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. Go on.
What we should probably talk about is something quite important, because we've done gadgets for all the Bonds. Yeah, Craig doesn't have any.
A bit.
Yeah, but that's what I mean.
Well, he has that conversation with Q, no?
Well, he's got a gun.
We don't really go in. He says we don't really go in for the exploding pen anymore. You've got that shit in your shoe, and also fucking what do you want, mate? Seriously.
I mean, more to the point, at the end.
I like that.
Not at the end. In fact, in the middle of Skyfall, it's a new invention from Q Branch. A radio.
He flicks that thing of exactly. No, absolutely. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. That it shouldn't be about big Deus Ex Machina, big fucking saviors that will save you, will click a button and oh no, so it's their radio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I think there are two things that he actually does that I really love.
Yeah.
Gadgetry wise. Yeah. One being Casino Royale, I'm sorry.
And it works so well, by the way. It's called a radio and then tamf, and then the fucking helicopters turn up behind him.
Yeah.
So pimp.
I mean, as a set piece.
So pimp.
That's amazing. If you could click a button and just summon Lynx.
Ta-dan,
and they would just be there.
And then the fucking helicopters turn up. So pimp. So pimp.
But no, my best Craig gadgets in Casino Royale, when he's been poisoned and realizes he's been poisoned. And firstly, he does what you should do when you've been poisoned, which is into the fucking bathroom, salt in the glass of water, make yourself vomit.
Try to throw up.
Realize it's not going to work. Then into the car, and then he gets jacked into this weird ass supernatural, like, internet.
But then it goes into the whole thing of, like, all the cables not plugged in or whatever. But it,
the gadget I'm picking up
on,
by the way,
It feels real, right?
Because it is real.
It's so good.
Because this is legit a thing.
So that is a thing that the people on the number, they do
blood
that?
Blood toxicology analysis remotely is now a thing that the US have been working on in the military.
Right.
I mean, a portable defibrillator has been a thing forever. But that is legit.
No way. 100%. That's not a thing. Hey, seriously a thing? I mean, that was like 12 years ago, so seriously?
Uh-huh.
That's amazing.
And?
But that's why it feels like a fucking legit secret agent number. Like, beyond I've flipped my car over 25 times or whatever.
And then got smacked.
It feels like, oh shit, I've been poisoned. I need to eat this shit, and then I need to get this shit clamped onto my chest, and then pound, 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 pound. Like, you know, it's that's amazing.
But at the same time, fallibility of the system, blah, blah, blah.
No, that's
also,
not a real
the palm
thing.
Print pistol.
That's not a real thing as well.
Well, no, we already had this. Dalton, with
I know we've already
I'm
had this conversation.
I'm recognise your palm.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how sensitive are those sensors that we can't notice?
They can unlock
You can't see me, sorry, because I'm looking my hand around my thumb. Like, I mean, how good are those sensors?
Good. They're pretty good.
Good enough, it would appear.
Do we have any one-star reviews for Mr. Craig? I'm hoping the answer is no.
We do. We do.
It's Amazon One Star Reviews.
Well, we do. Well, I agree with you. And I agree with you, but we do. And those are... The Blu-ray was terrible.
Is that it?
Skyfall 2017. I was told this was a James Bond movie. This was not a Blu-ray. That's literally it for the... That's it. That's what we got. That's what we got. Nobody apparently disagrees with the fact that Casino Royale is fucking good. And Skyfall, indeed.
Been listening to a special length edition of We're Drunk and We Know Things, hosted by Rob Dudley and Mike Dean, recorded in front of a very inebriated audience and by two fairly inebriated presenters in the Blind Pig Cocktail Bar in St. Helier, Jersey. The eagle-eared amongst you will probably have realised that this outro was not recorded at the same time as the rest of the episode. I'm not gonna lie, we got completely and totally shit-faced. It turns out that 24 hours in a day, 24 Bond martinis in a recording session, is really not good life advice. We hope you enjoyed this special length edition of We're Drunk and We Know Things, and would ask you all to like us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook, and please remember, enjoy your martinis responsibly.